Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. Fancy Brian looking glorious in turquoise down in the Shaw. Would you call that turquoise?
I'll call it anything you like as long as you don't call it red.
Perhaps aquamarine. It's a lovely shade on you.
Thank you. It's, baby blue almost. It's a little bit, it's nice. It's a brand new shirt. It's the first time I've worn it, too.
Oh, it looks good on you, though. Did you get a free bowl of soup with that shirt?
I wish. I'll take it if you give me a shirt.
No, it is a nice color on you. I don't mean to, by casting the Caddyshack upon you, I don't mean to imply I don't like the hat. And Evan wearing his customary hoodie here at the world headquarters. Now, just in case it rains inside. Why do you always hood yourself from our view, Evan? Yes, very secretive, that one. Like an assassin. So we got Evan lightly screening your calls. I'm going to start calling you the assassin. Ebone, the assassin. Anyways, I'm being a little lighter, trying to be a little lighter. These have not been light days. These have been troubling days in our nation. And we're going to talk about a number of topics today, and we're going to take another crack at the fine guest. I thought I had her booked yesterday. Today, second time's got to be the charm. Charlotte Dennett, a author and journalist. I have read portions of her book, Follow the Pipelines, Uncovering the Mystery, How a Spy, Lost Spy in the Deadly Politics of the Great Game for Oil. It's about oil, y'all. And also, she's got a brand new book. I have not read any part thereof, but it's why I've asked her to come on. She is a resource on the topic of Ukraine and Russia and the pipelines. And, I'm so sick of fighting wars over oil, but that's exactly what's happening currently in the Ukraine. And anyways, we'll bring the expert on, journalist Charlotte Dennett, in about 20 minutes. But I want to tell you, Fancy Brian, I thought I'd start today by, and I always try to tell the audience the truth. I try to set the expectations for them. And today, my expectation is that you, the fair audience, and you, Fancy Brian, and even you, Evan, we should all consider panicking. It may be time to panic. I'll tell you why. Paul Waldman, I'm going to use part of his column and a few of my own opinions to kind of get her started today. Liberals are right to panic about what will follow Roe's demise. Paul Waldman at the Washington Post. As we grapple with the Supreme Court's apparent and imminent decision overturning Roe v. Wade, Democrats are warning that this portends an attack on many other rights guaranteed in prior decisions. The right to use birth control could go next. Since the 1965 case that guaranteed it, Griswold v. Connecticut, was the foundation on which Roe was built. The conservatives could reverse Obergefell versus Hodges, the 2015 case that guaranteed marriage equality. Heck, under the rationale Justice Samuel Alito used in his decision, even Loving v. Virginia, which struck down state laws outlawing interracial marriage, well, hell, man, they could be vulnerable as well. Just a little aside, you know what Justice Alito is supposed to be doing today? Today, tonight specifically, maybe after work hours. He's supposed to be the headliner, big judicial conference, Fifth Court of Appeals. He's the, that's his appellate court. When you're on the Supreme Court, there are certain jurisdictions, and he's got the Fifth Circuit. So when the Fifth Circuit needs something to be heard in an emergency, well, he is the justice that is called. And he was to be the honoree tonight. And suddenly, shockingly, Justice Alito is without public opinion today. So no explanation, cancellation. Justice Alito apparently is not going to the big judicial conference in the Fifth Appellate Circuit tonight.
It must be because he's so proud of what was released.
I'm absolutely clear that that would be the case. Back to the writing of Waldman at the Washington Post. Thinking about where I'm sourcing this. To these warnings, many conservatives have replied, oh, come on, you liberals are exaggerating. The Supreme Court isn't going to do that. And Republican state legislatures aren't going to go nuts and outlaw contraceptives. Just calm down. You know, calm down, people. All's well. Calm down. Here's a bit more. But the truth is that, if anything, liberals aren't panicking enough. The future of any particular right may be hard to predict, but we can say for sure that both the Supreme Court's conservative supermajority and the Republican politicians, well, they're feeling unrestrained, unlimited in their ambitions, with the kind of freedom only a complete lack of accountability can provide. Do you doubt? Let's take a look around. A few bullet points here I'd like to share with you in the audience. There's a push within the anti-abortion movement, which will need a new focus once Roe is overturned, to go after contraception. Senator Marsha Blackburn, Republican from Tennessee, lovely hair Marsha's got, recently denounced the ruling in Griswold. And she's not alone. Republican states are already moving to limit access to birth control in various ways. And this is a clear target of many in the movement. They will likely begin by targeting Plan B, then IUDs, and eventually they're coming for your pill. So there's that. Also, the legislative thing coming out of the state of Louisiana. A Louisiana House committee approved a bill this week that defines a fetus as a human being from the moment of fertilization. I mean, every sperm is sacred indeed. From fertilization, why not from God's conceptualization of the future child? You know, can't you read into those tea leaves? So if you've effectively extended personhood at the point of fertilization, well, to end that, you know, that blastos, well, that would be murder. You get what they're doing? Let me read on from the writing of Paul Waldman. A Louisiana House committee approved a bill this week that defines a fetus as a human being from the moment of fertilization, making both a woman who has an abortion and her doctor guilty of participating in homicide. Some GOP states have already outlawed receiving medication for abortions through the mail. More will follow. And do you think they won't be arresting women who get them? Even under existing law, prosecutors in red states have often investigated and arrested women who have had miscarriages. Under the new abortion regime, such arrests are almost certain to accelerate. More, there's more good news. Republican legislators are exploring ways to stop women from having abortions, not only in their own states, but in other states as well. Let's restrain their movement as well. Can't we just chain them up at home? You know, barefoot pregnant, like they should be? Sarcasm? Exclamation point? Although Alito's draft includes a passage denying it's a prelude to nullifying other rights, many legal experts read it to suggest that Obergefell could be the next precedent to be reversed. It was a 5-4 decision of the court, far less conservative than this one, which believes that stare decisis is for losers. Alito, Clarence Thomas, and John Roberts all dissented angrily from that decision. They now have three more conservatives who could join in reversing it on nearly an identical rationale to the one they used to overturn Roe. And here's another one. This is new news to me. I'd seen this a little earlier today. I'm going to share it with you, our fair audience. Governor of Texas, Greg Abbott. We've talked about him quite a bit. You know, the guy that shut down the international border just because didn't find any guns, drugs, weapons, immigrants. Just because. Just going to stifle trade because, you know, it makes him look good. He's going to put people on buses to D.C., those damn immigrants. You know, they're voluntarily being shipped against their will to the District of Columbia. Put them on the Fox News doorstep so you get good video. You know, rubbing Joe Biden's face. Well, what's Abbott doing now? Wednesday, Abbott said, that the state plans to resurrect a 1982 ruling that required states to provide public education to all children, including those of undocumented immigrants. Many conservative activists are open about their intention to completely replace American public education with private school vouchers and homeschooling. And perhaps we'll read more deeply about this advocacy of Greg Abbott, but Abbott is effectively trying to eliminate the right to a free public education. So I'm sure, you know, nothing wrong with overturning a little stare decisis, getting rid of some precedent, just changing the rules as we go along here. Let me see. I don't know if I'll get all the way to conclusion, but let me see if I can try. Last couple paragraphs here. They learned it. Well, I'm going to have to come back. Doesn't pick up any thoughtful point in the narrative. And I always try to be thoughtful in my narrative here on the Devil's Advocates radio show. So if you were wondering, you know, if you got up this morning and thought, well, how should I react today? You know, what should be my reaction to the, you know, the soon-to-be overturning of Roe v. Wade, and what could that mean for me? It means you should be panicking. Like, big time. You should be reacting in real time. You should be doing everything you can. Women marching in the streets and their allies marching in the streets. But it's time. It's time. This is your wake-up call. It is 12 o'clock midnight. It is time to freaking panic at the disco. Come back with us. We are the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. You're always welcome to join this big show. Got a guest coming soon. Your calls could be next. 844-967-2789.
I don't want to create a panic.
Remain calm. All is well.
Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. Your calls, they're always welcome here. 844-967-2789. We're expecting a rescheduled guest, Charlotte Dennett, a journalist and source on Ukraine, Russia, in oil. We're going to talk with her soon. You could be next, though. 844-96-PARTY. And the question, you know, if you're joining us just a little bit late, you know, did you get up this morning? How do you feel? What should I do today? Well, according to Paul Waldman at the Washington Post, you should strongly, or at least modestly, consider panicking right now. Panic. Now is the time for panic. Let me continue. From the Waldman piece, there is simply no doubt that conservatives, both on the Supreme Court and in elected office, are feeling unleashed in a way they have not been in modern history. To any suggestion of they'd never go that far, you have to ask, why not? Obviously, Republicans, except for a few extremists, don't actually want to overturn Loving, you know, let's say Loving Virginia, so states can make interracial marriage illegal, even if some might muse about it. But most of them would like to overturn Obergefell, so the chances that they'll at least try are far higher. You like same-sex marriage? You think it should be a constitutional right? Don't get too used to it. If you believe political constraint might stay their hand, you're probably wrong. You might argue that Republicans know Americans are perfectly content with marriage equality by now. but most Americans are happy with Roe. And look what's happening there. Over and over, Republicans have learned that there are seldom political consequences for the choices they make. Yes, they lose elections when circumstances turn against them. There's an economic collapse, or they lose in the midterm like the president's party usually does, or they put up some terrible candidates. But as a rule, the voters do not hold them to account for their extremism. I'd like to think that's why we're here. But anyways, I continue from the Waldman at the Washington Post. We've seen it before. Republicans do something shocking. Liberals say, history will not be kind to you. And Republicans respond. Who cares? In the end, all that matters is power and your willingness to use it. Power, buddy. Power! They learned it after Bush v. Gore that the Supreme Court simply handed George W. Bush the presidency. It didn't matter. Everyone moved on. Bush got elected, and he put a couple of more justices on the court. They learned it when Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, but all Senate Republicans joined in refusing to allow Barack Obama to fill a Supreme Court vacancy in 2016. Liberals got mad, but what happened? Republicans got their frickin' supermajority. Power wins, and the public attention span is short. The conservative movement has many more ambitions. Let's call them ambitions. Oh, they got big aspirations, you know, for controlling your lives. But let me read on from Waldman. The conservative movement has many more ambitions and a Supreme Court eager to fulfill them. So no, liberals are not being hyperbolic when they warn about the retrograde right-wing revolution that could follow the end of Roe. The right is not hiding its plans. All you have to do is believe them. Do you believe? Do you believe? I believe. Yeah, there is a Santa Claus and a malfeasant Republican Party in this nation. A little bit more here. Not from the Waldman piece. That's all Waldman has to offer today, at least on the topic of the Supreme Court. A little more commentary, though. Republicans are already targeting the right to a public education. More about the Greg Abbott advocacy in Texas. Not easy for me to alliterate, but anyways, here I go. Despite glib right-wing claims to the contrary, as many legal scholars and constitutional experts were quick to point out, Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito's leaked draft opinion ending abortion rights opens the door wide open for the reversal of decades of human rights litigation. An issue is Alito's rejection of the Ninth Amendment, which states that the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Or in plain English, I always try to speak in plain English, you know, occasionally with a stumble. Plenty of rights are guaranteed by implication in the Constitution, such as the right to privacy, even if they're not explicitly delineated. Despite his alleged originalism, right, that's what they always claim. However, Alito was quite clear that he feels the opposite is true. If it ain't singled out by name in the Constitution, it's not a right. Here's a quote. The Constitution makes no reference to abortion. He writes in the draft opinion. Again, this is the words of Alito. As a political scientist, Scott Lemieux noted that this is a junior high school debate society argument unworthy of anyone with a law degree, much less a Supreme Court seat. But it does open the door to repealing birth control rights, same-sex marriage, a decade's worth of social progress that religious zealots like Alito deplore. Already excited Republicans are drafting bills that would throw women in prison for homicide for abortion and same-sex marriage rights. And meanwhile, they're restoring the right of parents to marry an 11-year-old off to an adult man. You know, because they care more about the babies than the babies that, you know, they would marry off to grown men at, you know, let's call it 11. But while Republicans are dusting off their obsessive desire to police American bedrooms, they're starting to notice that Alito's argument has implications for all the human rights they wish to end. We're going to have to come back to Greg Abbott and his advocacy to end the public schools in Texas. Why should your kids have free public schools? All the rich kids go to private school. They don't need the free public schools. And I mean, hell, why do we owe you anything? We don't even owe you rights. Come back. The Devil's Advocates. 63% of the time, we're right every time. Charlotte Dennett, a fine author and journalist, joins me next. Talking Ukraine, oil, pipelines, etc.
I want you to be nice until it's time to not be nice.
Come on. Do it. Do it!
It's a process. It's a process. We'll get it done.
Come on! Do it now!
Very powerful.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. I'd like to welcome a guest, first-time arriver, Charlotte Dennett. She is an author and a journalist. I've got her book, Follow the Pipelines, Uncovering the Mystery of a Lost Spy and the Deadly Politics of the Greater Game for Oil. Charlotte, welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio
Show. Hey, I love the title.
Your great book title. Or my radio show?
No, the Devil's Advocate. I like that.
Well, the Devil joins me most days about 5 o'clock. But Charlotte, if you'll bear with me, I'll do the interview for now. Time Magazine calls you an expert in resource-based politics, and in this case, we're talking fossil fuels. And I quoted your publicist, or more accurately, she quotes Henry Kissinger, and the statement was, "If you control the oil, you control the world effectively." So tell me what that means in the current geopolitics in what's going on with the Ukraine and Russia right now.
Yeah, well, it's very relevant. But I think the first thing that your listeners need to understand, taking up from Henry Kissinger's comment, and by the way, he was the protege of Nelson Rockefeller, which was belonged to the preeminent oil family in the world during the 20th century, so he should know. You know, when you ask people, why is oil important? Let's start with oil. And they'll come up with explanations about industry and gasoline and all of that. But what they miss, because they're not told, is that oil is the fuel of the military, first off. So that was the military machines around the world are the biggest consumers of oil, and any country that aspires to be a major power in the world has to have secure oil supplies, and that also means secure pipeline routes that can distribute the oil. So when we come up to the issue of Ukraine, first of all, I'm sure folks have seen the scenes of black smoke billowing up into the sky, and that's from oil depots or refineries that have been hit, and they've been deliberately hit on either side to try to slow down the advance of the trucks and whatever else consumes oil in the military. And we know that slowed up the Russian advance early on into Ukraine. They literally ran out of oil. And to me, that's not surprising, because we can go back as far as World War One and World War Two and know that Germany ran out of oil in both those wars. They ran out of fuel. So it's very important to control this stuff. And then there's other factors that pertain to Ukraine, and that is the distribution of natural gas through pipeline systems through Ukraine. And I can elaborate on that, but the way I look at this crisis, I'm calling it potentially the mother of all energy wars, and if it escalates and even gets us into possible nuclear war. But there is a very overwhelming energy component to this whole conflict that does not get emphasized enough. Unless you look at separate things like, oh, the cost of fuel is going up, and you know I have to pay more at the pump, or people worrying that Russia is going to turn off their natural gas in certain countries in Eastern Europe, and they're all scrambling to find alternative supplies, but there's a much deeper game going on here. I call it the great game for oil and natural gas.
Let's also talk about how monetary policy is sort of tied, perhaps in part, to this action of Putin. What is his policy with the ruble, and how is he trying to force, let's call it, hostile foreign parties to only do business with his country effectively in his chosen monetary means? They're trying to push the dollar policy out, are they not?
Well, that's what he's trying to do. Last I looked, he was demanding that Poland and Bulgaria pay for their supplies in rubles, and I think they're resisting, if I saw that correctly. But if they're resisting, then they're probably going to have to find alternative sources, and that's why there's this mad scramble going on. For one thing, paying. Usually, oil and natural gas is paid for in dollars, all right? And that's why you have the term petrodollars. But there are a number of countries that want to move away from the dollar as their reserve currency. And so Putin's trying rubles, and some have tried euros. So there are also these financial wars that are going on behind the scenes. And they're really all tied in. It's like how do you make an empire work? You got to control the oil. You got to have the money tied up in a certain currency that's going to pay for the oil, and you also need the military to protect the oil. And these factors are playing out in Ukraine, but the full context isn't being delivered to the average listener or viewer. They tend to look at sort of isolated things and thinking what a mess it is.
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to reset. Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Fine guest. She is Charlotte Dennett. She is an author and journalist. And before we go further, you've got something of a family history in the oil industry, or at least attached or sort of tangentially to the oil industry through American intelligence. Do you not, Charlotte?
Yes, yeah, and the other component, which I forgot to mention, is espionage, spying. Very fundamental. If you want to control oil or find oil, you need your spies to go out there. And my father was the first American master spy in the Middle East. So I'm taking you back to the end of World War II, and his last mission for the Central Intelligence Group, which was the immediate predecessor to the CIA, was to go to Saudi Arabia and to determine the route of the Trans-Arabian Pipeline, which was to funnel incredible rich Saudi oil to Europe via a pipeline that crosses the Arabian Peninsula and was supposed to have a terminal point in either, get this, Haifa, Palestine, or Lebanon, which is directly to the north. And it eventually went through Lebanon, and I think my father had something to do with it because he thought there was too much unrest in Palestine at the time. We were getting close to the creation of the State of Israel and fighting against the British, fighting Jews and Arabs, fighting each other. So he recommended it going to Lebanon. But anyway, he died shortly after on his trip leaving Saudi Arabia in a plane crash. I was just an infant at the time, but I have spent many decades investigating his death, and I started with that. You know, why was Tapline, this Trans-Arabian pipeline, so important? I found a great article in the New York Times, March 2nd, 1947, two weeks before the plane crash, and it goes into this incredible depth about these different powers that are vying against each other to control oil, and particularly Saudi oil at this time. And believe it or not, it was the French and the British and the Russians who were all spying against the Americans and doing everything they could to blunt American control over Saudi oil, and they failed. And it was the control of Saudi oil that catapulted the United States into being a world power, not only in the Middle East, but in the world. So having studied that, I began to apply pipeline politics, so to speak, to other conflicts in the Middle East, particularly. And I focused in on the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan and discovered that there was an underlying oil motivation in both those conflicts. And, you know, I've got maps to prove it. Pipeline maps. If you want me to elaborate, I will.
Well, no, Charlotte.
I read the book.
I recall the first and the second Persian Gulf War, and it wouldn't shock me at all. I've said many, many times, you know, I don't want to go fight another war over oil. But what I wouldn't have guessed is that perhaps what the Ukrainians' crime is, in no small part, at least in Putin's opinion, is he is getting, or the nation is effectively in the way of his delivery of petrochemicals to where it needs to go. How much of that do you think factors into his invasion and his larger plans, if you could read the tea leaves?
Yeah, okay. So the first big clue for anybody is the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. That was a pipeline that was recently completed and was to send Russian natural gas to Germany, and then from there it would be transshipped to other parts of Europe. The United States has been fighting that pipeline for, what, at least 4 years. The reason is that they did not want, the U.S. did not want Europe to become more dependent, even more dependent on Russian oil and natural gas as it already is. As it stands, Europe depends on 40% of its energy supplies from Russia. So if you were to do a timeline on the what leads up to the Russians' invasion of Ukraine, one of the things you'll find out, they're twofold. Constant efforts to weaken Russia's control of natural gas and its shipment throughout Europe, which is the basis of the whole Russian economy. That's how he's made his billions. He's been banking on the oil and gas sector. And so that's one of the factors. And the other factor is that there was a deal struck after the dissolution of the Soviet Union way back in 1992 that the NATO would not advance any closer to the borders of Russia. It would not advance one inch, and this was in writing. And then what happened is that deal was constantly broken, and the NATO countries, once with the dissolution, the military supplies that was being shipped to these former Soviet republics and enclaves had the Russians very concerned. They could see that there was military encroachment on their own boundaries, and when you've got missiles that they would not have been able to stop if they were fired from Ukraine, well, you can understand the national security concerns that Putin had. And Putin actually, and his foreign ministry and so on, protested many times, even right up to the eve of Russia's invasion. So, I mean, there are other factors. And, you know, Putin's trying to revive the glory of the great Mother Russia and the Soviet Union. That's certainly part of him trying to restore these former territories. But there are these other very important economic concerns that he has and which the West has, and they're competing with each other. They're fighting each other. And so, you know, I say a plague on both their houses. They're gambling, you know, seriously gambling. And if something could just go wrong and just spark a third world war, possible nuclear war, and we all stand here as just bystanders, feeling very edgy about the whole thing.
Charlotte, if people would like to read your book, and I know you've got multiple titles, I've got one of them, Follow the Pipelines, Uncovering the Mystery of a Lost Spy in the Deadly Politics of the Great Game for Oil, and I believe you've also got a specific writings about the Ukraine-Russian conflict. if people want to find your writings and educate themselves and maybe, if not feel better, at least understand it better, Charlotte, how did they buy the books?
Okay. So first of all, I've set up a website called followthepipelines.com, and I'm still just getting it started, but I've started to post articles on Ukraine. And so they can go there, and they can also read more about my book there. Then they can get the book from my publisher, Chelsea Green. They can order it on Amazon.com.
Charlotte, going to have to stop you there. Thank you so much. More Devil's Advocates. We'll be right back.
Never get involved in a land war in Asia.
Think you know politics? Again, welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. Want to thank my most recent guest, a fine one, Charlotte Dennett, author and journalist. I've got her, well, one of her books, Follow the Pipelines, Uncovering the Mystery of a Lost Spy and the Deadly Politics of the Great Game of Oil. Her publisher, again, was Chelsea Green, and that's C-H-E-L-S-E-A Green Publishing at chelseagreen.com. And also the website she mentioned where she's beginning to publish articles about Ukraine and Russia and pipelines and how petrochemical policy is really, in many ways, moving this genocide. Followthepipelines.com. Again, Charlotte Dennett, the fine guest. Thank you, Charlotte. Don will join at 5, but that's all I got for guests today. So, you know, you're going to have to do the heavy lifting. Not you so much, Fancy Brian. More me and Evan as well, because he's going to screen your calls lightly at 844-967-2789. Now, we have not talked a lot about Ukraine-Russia of late. And the other topic that we have not, at least not on my show, not on the Devil's Advocates, talked about a lot, the fact that we are approaching 1 million, I think we've crossed the threshold, 1 million dead Americans. And when I say Americans, I say it without the A, Americans, because it's a lot of the Americans that are doing the dying, if you know what I'm saying.
It's roughly the population of San Jose.
Yeah, 1 million dead Americans from COVID in the last 2 years. And the Democrats, and this, of course, will raise the ire of all righties that only want to do the right thing by the freedom-loving people of Ukraine, you know, because they love foreign democracies, less so their own. But the Democrats are now trying to tie more Ukraine aid with ongoing coronavirus aid. And you know the Republicans aren't going to like it, you know, because the pandemic's over, everyone, nothing to see here. TheHill.com reporting, Senate Democrats are eyeing linking more assistance to Ukraine to a stalled coronavirus aid package after weeks of privately mulling the path forward. Oh, Democrats do a lot of private mulling. Senator Dick Durbin, the number two Senate Democrat, said following the two together, folding the two together, came up during a closed-door lunch this week. Well, why don't we make a little package deal? I know Chuck wants to move a Ukraine package and put COVID in with it, Durbin said, referring to Senate Majority Leader Charles Schumer. Durbin cautioned that he wasn't sure a final decision had been made to tie them together, but said, we're going to try. That's the ambition. We want to get them both done. Oh, the strong ambitions. You know, we hope, we're hoping. A little bit more. Schumer has repeatedly talked about the need to pass both Ukraine assistance and coronavirus aid, but has been cagey about whether he would link them. Asked about putting them together in one package, Schumer said only Thursday, stay tuned. Stay tuned. Chocolate in the peanut butter, man. Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat from Virginia, who said this week that he didn't have a personal preference, said he wouldn't be surprised if they tied them all together, put a bow on them, made a bundle out of them, you know. I'm not surprised. I think this is sort of plan A. Plan A, linking the two issues, has support from top Democrats and the White House. I've been adamant that they need to go together. Both need to get done, said Patty Murray, a senator from the great state of Washington, the number three Senate Democrat. Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the White House have also thrown their support behind tying them together. You know, I'm starting to feel like they're going to tie these saints together, Fancy Brian. The president, of course, this is a quote, the president, of course, put them forward because together, and that is his preference for them to move together because they're both essential. There's urgency to moving them both forward, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters back in April. Now, the administration recently requested more than $30 billion in additional Ukraine aid, which on its own is expected to get broad bipartisan support. You know, that's the easy part, right? You know, accepting a few Yahoo Freedom Caucus Republicans. Maybe Glenn Grothman for good measure. But, as this article at The Hill reports, but Republicans are vowing to oppose it if Democrats attach $10 billion in coronavirus assistance. So $30 billion more in foreign aid, no problem. $10 billion more in domestic aid because there could be another wave of this pandemic. Hell no. That's a non-starter, right? Ha. Schumer and a group of Republicans previously struck a deal on the aid, but Republicans then blocked the bill after Democrats refused to give them a vote on Title 42. Now, you recall what Title 42 is, right? That's a Trump-era, sort of an extreme measure to keep immigrants out of the nation, using the pandemic as a justification thereof. Anyways, here's how The Hill describes it, a Trump-era pandemic public health policy that allows for rapid expulsion of migrants at the border. I think they use a catapult and blocks them from seeking asylum. That part's a joke, maybe. Republicans view the two as linked because the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention want to rescind the Title 42 while a separate, broader public health emergency is still in place. So Republicans want to rescind it, even though you could say we're still in a pandemic. I mean, the numbers are starting to go up again. I got a couple hosts on this radio network that currently have COVID-19 positives. You didn't hear one of them on Monday night. You're not going to hear one of them tonight. You know, COVID is still amongst us. Just point that out. They've made it clear that they will block Ukraine aid if coronavirus assistance is attached without a resolution on the border issue. The package would need 60 votes to advance, meaning the support of 10 GOPers. Oh, 10 Republicans of conscience. I can count them on both hands. I can't even think of 10 Republicans nationwide of conscience. Senator Roy Blunt, Missouri, he's a Republican, said it would be a big mistake to tie them together. It would be a mistake. You take things that are really doable and then you add something to them that makes them, if not impossible, much slower to achieve. You know, he's like a chocolate with no peanut butter kind of guy. He would not have been down for the Reese's. Come back with us. Hour two of the Devil's Advocates is next. We are going to take some phone calls. 844-967-2789. You can be a part. We're going to talk about the current state of the nation. A million dead. First and foremost, who died? I'll give you some of the statistical breakdown of that. And what does that mean to those of us that, you know, were fortunate enough to survive? Well, I can tell you, there are something like 200,000 plus additional orphans in this nation. And that could be devastating to those kids for a lifetime. More Devil's Advocates. Hour two is next. Be a part. Come back.
I figure we have 42 minutes until the end of civilization as we know it.
Remain calm! All is well!
You want to go out with a bang?